Hello, podcast world. This is Krusty with the Krusty Crankshaft. Here I am today to give you episode 2 of the Krusty Crankshaft. I'm super excited to be here. I want to thank everyone for joining in and listening. I want to thank Anchor for their help, their app, their program that makes it super easy to do this. And without it, I wouldn't be able to do it. And a lot of people wouldn't. It opens a lot of doors for us. So what I wanted to talk about today is how to be a technician, automotive technician at a dealership, and what it's like to be a technician at an automotive dealership, how the pay scale kind of works, what these people, guys and gals, what they put up with on a daily basis. It's very difficult at times. But first off, so is it easy? No, it's not easy. Some days are easy. I mean, depending on the job. I mean, the basis itself, anybody that's worked on a car, they know that it has its challenges. Some things, you know, once you've done them a lot, and that's the benefit of working at a dealership, once you've done them many times, the repetition and the experience is what earns you your pay. And that only comes with time and experience. You can't just learn. You don't just learn from a book. I mean, doctors don't just learn to be a doctor from a book. They have to do an internship and so on. So, you know, things in the automotive, it's dangerous. Things are heavy. There's a lot of sharp things. I mean, there's possibilities for things to catch on fire. There's dangerous fluids, you know, with not only that, but with all the chemicals in the fluids, they have to be contained. You can't have spills. You know, you have EPA, you have regulations that you have to go by, safety standards, OSHA. I mean, it has its challenges. It's very rewarding, but is it easy? No, it's definitely not easy, and not just everyone can do it. So, what does it take to be an automotive technician? So, can anyone do it? I mean, no, I don't believe that everyone can do it. Just anybody off the street. You have to have, first off, I think you have to be passionate about the automobile, cars, anything mechanical, basically. It doesn't have to be super passionate just about cars, but I think that if you have a good technical background, if you have a technical thought process, you can, you know, kind of take a snapshot of things before you take them apart with your mind. Then it helps with smartphones now. We didn't have this back in the day when I started. You can take photographs, you know, before you take it apart, and you have it right there. You can take 100 pictures if you want, and you have every the history of what wire goes where and what it looked like before and, you know, how it should look afterwards. And it should look the same or better. It should actually look better. So if you've worked under an engine compartment, you've worked on an engine, you've done some wiring or a cylinder head job or whatever it may be, it should look at least that good or better. I think better, because it should be cleaner, if anything else. I mean, you should be able to open that hood and no one should be able to tell that you were even in there. There shouldn't be any residue or grease prints or hand prints, you know, under there. Everything should be back in its place and the way it was. And the reason being is, you know, we're considered professionals. You know, we're not, and nothing against shady mechanics or people that do their own mechanics that have learned in their backyard, but you're called a technician. You're not technically called an automotive mechanic. It's automotive technician. Your printer does, you don't call, when someone has to fix your computer, they don't say a computer mechanic, or, you know, they might say repairman, but that's not professional anymore. It's a technician is the correct terminology. And automotive technicians are professionals. I mean, it's not just something that anybody can do. If anybody could do it, they wouldn't have to bring their cars into a dealership or, you know, another facility to get it done. So there's a lot involved. And you have to remember that whether it is a $50,000 car or a $200,000 car or a $200 car, it's still someone's personal property and it means a lot to them. So if you don't give it back in at least the same condition or better, somebody's probably going to be upset. If you've worked on their car, if you've worked on their window regulator or done something with the glass or the door, there shouldn't be fingerprints all over the glass and there shouldn't be fingerprints all over the door panel if you've removed it. Definitely should not be. If you haven't cleaned it up, then somebody in that place, one of the detail guys, need to, you know, wash the car if it's been sitting there for a while and if it's gotten dirty, and they normally do. I mean, that's kind of the norm. So I'm kind of getting off track a little bit there, but can anybody do it? I don't think that just anybody. You could probably teach, and I've taught students that didn't have an automotive background and they turned out being good technicians. Many, many, many of them, you know, but they already had a good technical thought process and they were together in their thinking and, you know, they were able to keep parts together and stuff organized. And that's a big thing too. Organization. You need to be organized. You need to be able to find your tools. They can't be all over the place. I mean, you've got to be able to, they've got to be there when you need them. If you need a 10 millimeter, you should have at least five or six of them anyways, because we all know that 10 millimeter is the one that always gets lost. So, but anyway, so can anybody do it? No, I think that, you know, some people, you know, people could be taught that don't have an automotive background. I'm not putting people down and saying that, you know, if this is really what you want to do and you want to get into the automotive business, then, you know, you should give it a try. And I don't know, that's it. So training, it's very difficult in modern times to get a position at a dealership if you don't have some sort of education in automotive training. You know, maybe you know, the high school programs, they have programs now where the students, you know, go half a day to a technical school and they get some training there, and that's enough. That's enough to get it. I mean, can you get a job without having technical automotive training? Sure. I mean, sure. If you can get your foot in the door and prove yourself, absolutely. Why not? But it does help to have some kind of training. So, you know, whether you go to a technical college and get like an associate's degree, or like I said, like a high school program, there's a lot of those out there. There's some night classes, you know, for adult education. As I told you before, I taught automotive for 7 years. It was an associate's program. So it was a 2-year degree where they took classes that were equivalent to a 2-year associate's degree. That's not necessary, I guess, but in that associate's degree, they had a lot of business classes, you know, to help them if they were going to start their own business. They gave them computer training where they may have not gotten that, you know, Word documents, which is also a big part of being a technician now. You have to, you know, give a description of what repairs you did. And most technicians now will type that into a Word document, print it out, staple it to the order, and give it to the service writer. So, you know, they have a lot of that other training in that. You know, which is very important. I mean, you have to have good computer skills. If you don't have good computer skills, then you're definitely going to have problems working on the automobile. I mean, all the information that we look up is on a computer. So, you know, you have to look it up on there. All data, Mitchell, you know, Chevrolet's program, Ford, Chrysler, everybody has their own kind of program where they look up the information. So you have to be able to do that. Another thing that you have to remember is you have to be able to, for the most part, you know, when you start out, you're going to do oil changes if you don't have a lot of experience, or usually you're going to start out doing that anyways. If you just came out of technical school, they don't know what you're capable of. And a big misnomer is that people think just because you came out of, you know, a technical school and you have a year's training or a 2-year degree or whatever you have, there's this big stigmata that they think that, okay, so you came out of that program and now you can do anything. You can rebuild the engine, you can rebuild the transmission, you can diagnose an electrical problem, you can do anything. And that's absolutely not true for the most part. I mean, unless somebody had a pretty good solid background working on stuff on their own before they came to a trade school or a training program, that just doesn't happen. I mean, it's just like anything else, like being a doctor, like I spoke of earlier. I mean, you can't just, you know, come out of medical school and start doing, you know, brain surgeries. You have to do an internship and learn. And only time and experience can help you with that. And it's okay, but that's just the way it goes. Some people catch on faster than others. And training, you know, when you work at a dealership, you're the cream of the crop. So you have the latest and greatest training there for you. You will go and do multiple online training programs, you know, through the dealership. And a lot of them are online. A lot of times you go, we used to go for like 2 weeks at a time. When I was a Saturn technician, we'd go for 2 weeks at a time, which was kind of rough. They sent us to Spring Hill or Michigan, but we'd go. Sometimes you just went for a day or two, or, you know, there were some schools in Cleveland or Pittsburgh that you could drive to for a day, or maybe it was 2 days a week. But a lot of times you went for 2 weeks at a time. So you're there, you know, you're stuck there for the weekend, whatever. But my point being is that, you know, when you work at a dealership, you always have continuous training. So when there's a new model coming out, they make sure that everybody in the dealership has been trained on that. And simply, if you haven't been, then you're not able to do anything to that vehicle if you haven't had the training for it. They just won't allow you because you won't get paid. But how does the automotive pay scale work? So in the automotive world, even in the aftermarket shops, and I'm not putting those shops down by saying that a dealership technician, I've got buddies that own a lot of those facilities. So, and they're very good, very reputable facilities. They're good at what they do, and their employees are very good at what they do. But how they get paid, most for the most part, it's not usually an hourly position. So you don't clock in at 8 o'clock, you know, leave at 5, and you get paid $20 an hour for those 8 hours. That's just not how it works. When you first start out, you will. If you're a loop technician or a beginning technician, they will pay you hourly. But once you become a technician, you get into what's called flat rate. So how flat rate works is you get paid by the job. So if the job pays an hour and a half, let's say you're going to do a brake job and it pays an hour and a half. And this would be CP, which stands for customer pay. So this is a customer paying for it out of their pocket, not a warranty repair. So if it pays 1.5 hours and you do it in 1 hour, you still get paid 1.5 hours pay. So if your pay rate is $20 an hour, you would get paid $30 for that job. But if it takes you 4 hours or 2 hours because you had some kind of problem going wrong, you know, unless you're able to get some extra time out of the customer, which sometimes you can, sometimes you can't, then you only get paid 1.5 hours. So if it took you 4 hours, you just lost a lot of money. So this is where I say that experience is your friend. And people don't realize that when they come in to get their car repaired, this is part of the reason why it's very expensive. The technician that is working on your car is getting paid for his experience. So if the technician gets a job that pays 8 hours and they do it in 6, then they make extra money. The customer doesn't pay less, because on the flip side, if it took them 10 hours, then the customer still only pays 6 usually. So, you know, it's you're paying for this professional technician who has gone to training, has done it for many years, has bought his own tools, because the dealership and most shops don't supply you with tools. So this is something that you have to buy. So this technician every week is buying tools. He has a tool bill to Snap-on, Matco, whoever comes in that week. So you usually have multiple bills. You know, maybe it's $20, $30, $40, $50 a week that you're paying out. Usually more, that would be on the cheap side. But that's things that you have to take into consideration that need to be considered before you get into the job. So back to flat rate. So in a 40-hour work week, if you have a very productive week, you can turn, the sky's the limit. I mean, a good average, if you're averaging 50 to 60 hours, probably closer to the 60 hour, you're doing well. There's weeks where you might turn 80 hours. I've seen guys turn 100 hours. It's just dependent on what's going on that week, how busy things are. Excuse me. If you have recalls, you know, you may have recalls where there's a million cars that need a control arm or something replaced, and it may pay 2 hours or 3 hours. And after you've done 50 of them, it may only take you an hour. So on that side, then you make money. You can make money because you do that. It becomes repetitive. You know what tools you need. You know how long it's going to take. You know what alignment adjustments you need to do, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, I mean, it can be very lucrative. But on the other side, when it's slow, people don't have money. You know, school comes back in, like this time of year right now. People don't have money to spend on their car, so it gets slow. Christmas time, it gets very slow. The summertime, when people are vacationing, it slows down for a time. Summer is usually the busiest time of the year because everybody's moving and traveling. But you have to kind of be your own accountant. So when you have the extra money, you kind of got to tuck some away, so that when you have these slow times like that, then you have something to fall back on, because you don't normally have a guarantee. Some shops do have a guarantee. So what they have a guarantee of is if you turn less than, say, 40 hours. Or 30 hours, whatever they have it set at, then some shops will pay you a guarantee. So they may pay you $10 an hour at 40 hours. So you might make $400, you know, before taxes, rather than nothing. There was times when we were flat rate years ago, and at Christmas time, you may have had like a 10-hour week, and that was what you got paid. So if you made $20 an hour, you had a $200 paycheck for that week, and that may have gone on for the whole month. You know, depending on, you know, when it does get real cold, stuff tends to break, and you know, you get tow-ins and alternators and batteries. So it just depends. I mean, it's up and down, but you just have to keep that in mind. And that's how flat rate works. So, and on the warranty side of things now, so if a brake job, what do we say, paid like an hour and a half, or we'll just say an hour. If a job pays an hour CP, customer pay, then it's half. Usually it is half if it's a warranty job. So if you work working for a car that's under warranty, you know, usually you have 3 and 36, 3 or 36,000 miles, bumper to bumper warranty, whatever. So if it normally pays an hour customer pay, it now pays a half an hour. So you get paid half of everything that is warranty. So if you do a bunch of warranty work this week, you may struggle and make 40 hours. And the next week you might have a bunch of customer pay stuff and you know, maybe some recalls or whatever, and make a bunch more money. But if you're stuck doing warranty work, or if you're a senior technician where you're repairing things that, you know, maybe a comeback. So a comeback is something that another technician repaired and it didn't get corrected. So if it happens enough, people get upset. Customers don't want to have to come back. So a lot of times they'll give the job to a senior technician. Now, you should get paid, but a lot of times you're not getting paid very well, especially if it's a warranty. So another thing you have to do with warranty repairs is you have to document everything that you do. So you have to document, you know, every code, every circuit number, what you removed. So if you had to remove a console or some seats to get to circuit 155A, and then you had to test connector 5B, for this voltage and that voltage, you better have all the repair instructions printed out, everything documented. So this is where, you know, if you can use Word and type, this is where it becomes beneficial, very beneficial. So you could type this all out and print it out, or you can write it all out. But you need to have everything included. You have to have everything that you did. So if you have a water leak or something crazy, I don't know, say you had 15 hours into it and you only had documentation for 8, they're not going to pay you 15. And how they know what you have into it is usually punch in and out, whether it's on a computer, or we used to punch out on a rolled manual time clock, but they started to use computers now. So now you just log into the job, you know, on your tablet or your PC or whatever you might have if you're the technician. So if you have 15 hours into it, you better be able to prove why. You know, what you can document that you have 15 hours into it. So, yeah, it's very, very difficult at times. It's very rewarding. The challenges make you feel good. So you get a challenging repair, you know, that took you, you know, that nobody else could fix. Maybe they took it to 4 other shops. They couldn't figure it out, but you figured it out. And you get to look at these cars every day. So a lot of the stuff, you know, you get to know the vehicle. So if you, you know, if you have these recalls where you do 500 of them over some time, then you definitely learn the vehicle. You learn the ins and the out, you know, what's, what happens. You know, of course the big one is check engine lights, drivability diagnostics. If you're a good technician that can do electrical repairs and drivability, repairs, then you can write your ticket, because everybody thinks that on the downside, unfortunately, they think that just because a car has a diagnostic trouble code that, you know, you just read that code and it tells you what's wrong. And sometimes that's the case. Usually not. Almost never. You know, it's a 50-50 chance. It's a crapshoot. So the problem could be anywhere from, you know, a computer module through 100 yards of wiring out to that component. So all of that stuff needs to be tested. It's not just, you know, a diagnostic dartboard. You don't just throw parts at a car and wait till something sticks or when you fix it. That's what shade tree people do, I guess. And not to put them down again, but this is what makes a technician different from somebody run of the mill. You're able to go through the technical process and the diagnostics and correctly do it to figure it out. It's not guesswork. People aren't paying $100 an hour when they come to the dealer to guess and have somebody throw parts at it. That's not going to happen. You know, occasionally, if it's something you can't duplicate, which those ones are very difficult, if you can't have a problem that you can't duplicate, those are very difficult. So sometimes, you know, if you can't come to a conclusion, you need to make a decision or sit down with the customer and be like, I've checked this, I've checked that. It's not just, not doing it right now. You know, if it's not broke, you can't fix it. So if you've got something strange like that, then maybe you can sit down with them and be like, you know, I've seen this. I'm pretty sure that this is what it is. I'm not 100%. We could try it. Or, you know, maybe sometimes you have a good used component. You could try hanging, you know, a used part on there for them. you know, not something that's not going to be safe. Brakes, you're not going to use used brakes, but, you know, maybe a used coil or a sensor, you know, hey, let's put this on there. I have that. Why don't you drive it for a week and let's see what happens. Then we'll come back and, you know, sit down and figure it out from there. If it doesn't, maybe it will. Great. If it does, then, you know, sometimes that happens though. Sometimes they're very difficult. And again, you need to be passionate about it. It has to be, it's not just a job. I mean, it's something that takes a lot of focus, you have to have a good memory. You've got to remember, you know, circuit diagrams, transmission, you know, a transmission teardowns. You've got to know where all these small check valves go, and you've got to be passionate about it. At least it helps. I mean, it's not something that you're just going to jump into and probably do for a year and then be like, you know, I'm a pro at it. It's probably not going to happen. Sometimes some people are really good, but it also opens doors to other opportunities. You know, sometimes you can move up and be a service manager, service advisor. Who knows? Maybe you don't like being a tech and you want to be a salesman. I don't know. I've known salesmen that made $100,000, over $100,000 a year, just selling cars. And it's not easy. I mean, it takes a skill set. Everything takes a skill set. Being a service advisor is very difficult. I've done that for about 5 years, and it's difficult too. I would rather be a tech. I would rather be a tech than to put up with some of the stuff that a service advisor has to put up with. But it opens up other doors too. If you wanted to go, you know, move on to a different dealership, or a higher end dealership, or a Mercedes dealership, or, you know, maybe you have something specifically that you want to do, a dealership that you want to work at. You know, you want to be a Ford tech or whatever. I mean, hey, go have at it. It's a great way to make money. It's a lot of fun. It has its ups and downs, and it can be difficult. But hey, this is Krusty, episode 2. We'll see you next week. Take it easy. Thanks. Peace.
Oh, thank you.